Hello, and welcome to episode 106 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and I'm joined by the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The man described by Mr. Magoo as quite a looker, Tony Esmond.
Thank you.
And this week, we're joined by an artist whose fine work can be seen in titles such as Sergeant Steel, Samurai Slasher, and his own Bertie Bear comic series. It's Andy Clift.
Hi.
Hello, Andy.
Hello.
Yes, a returning
guest.
Good
to have you back.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's a small group of returning guests.
Yeah, most of them don't like. We just slag them off behind their back when they've been on. Yeah. And, but we haven't really slagged Andy off. Should we get him back on?
Yeah. The slagging off will start. Yeah, don't worry. The slagging off will start after the show.
Well, I hope so. I hope so.
You ain't nobody till you've been slagged off by us.
that's obvious. Yeah.
Now Andy's come back to talk about a subject that we briefly touched upon on his first appearance, and we'll talk more about that in a second. But as always, this show is brought to you with the help of our fine sponsors, Comic House. Hey. Not only are they helping keep the Awesome Pod chugging onwards to give you episodes for free, because this show is for free. We don't charge people anything.
Nope.
Because they pay enough whenever they listen to it.
Yeah,
everyone pays in the end. But Comic House is also kicking ass in the name of pushing the envelope and of what independent publishing can achieve. Plus, issue 7 of the Comic House anthology has just been released, featuring part 3 of the Mandy the Monster Hunter strip that I'm doing. Which I'm... It's always nice seeing this stuff in print and just thinking, oh yes, it turned out a lot better than I thought it would.
How many parts is that? 4?
It's a 6-parter.
Oh, wow. Nice one. Okay.
Yeah, you're cranking that out. Dude.
Yeah, I always crank it out, Dan. You know me.
Yeah.
but as well as that, as well as that anthology, they're the guys behind a new app, which is basically Netflix for comics. And if you're not sold on that kind of concept, something's got to be wrong with you, surely.
Yeah.
You know,
dead inside.
Yeah. In about 10 years, there'll probably be a few other things like this, but. Comic House has been there, has got there first, and they're going to be the best. For all the latest info and notifications about the awesome indie comics app that they're doing, go to comichouse.com/app and sign up today. And if you want to just check out loads of indie books and loads of awesome stuff, go to comichouse.com. So there you go.
Yeah.
Now, it seems that every other week there seems to be some kind of media storm when it comes to something in comics, doesn't it?
Yes,
especially now, everything's always kicking off. Now, good or bad, the flames of fandom are rarely low these days, and everyone is shouting to the rafters about representations of all kinds. Rightfully so, in my opinion, if it's positive messages that are being heralded. I think we can all agree.
Yeah, however, done in the right way. We're all 100% in agreement with that, aren't we?
Yeah. However, one subject we don't see discussed as much in the comic press is our topic of discussion this week, and that is disability in comic books.
Yeah.
Now, we live in a world where disability has never been more visible, I would say. Such events as the Paralympics, like, they're more popular than ever. They even use the term superhuman in the advertising for that. So rightfully focusing on the amazing and sort of, and the inspirational things that people with disabilities can achieve.
Yes.
So how does this medium that we all cherish and defend so much compare? In a comics world where realism can be paramount, and there's a lot of that these days, they're harking on about realism, and every flavour of representation is pushed for, does the idea, concept, and very reality of disability get the treatment it deserves? There you go. That's what we're here to discuss this week, in our own ACP-flavoured way, of course. And as I said, when Andy was on our show before, we briefly touched on the subject. So to start us off, I think it's only fair that Andy himself... Are you ready, Andy? I think it's only fair that he kicks us off this week. So, Mr. Clift, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you very much. firstly, I'd like to thank you guys for inviting me back, because I had such... a lovely time last time.
Oh, well, we got great feedback about your show, I have to say. And one of my favourites. Yeah, definitely.
Oh,
yeah.
I appreciate that. Thank you. But especially to talk about this issue, because it's an issue that's obviously close to my heart. I've been a wheelchair user my whole life and a comic book reader for most of it. But first, I'd like to kind of acknowledge that this is only a small part of a wider issue, and that's sort of the representation of all minorities in comics. And I can also kind of understand that I, as a disabled person, sort of complaining about the lack of or misuse of disabilities in comics can kind of appear as massively self-serving, because everyone really wants is just representation, really. Which is the acknowledgement that we exist. Even though we're going to be mostly talking about disability in comics, I honestly believe that a lot of these issues that we'll be talking about could be implemented to, you know, most minorities when it comes to representation. So
it's a parallel, isn't it?
It's something that, you know, I've kind of looked into a lot over my life, obviously a lot more since you guys have asked me to come back, and it's slightly depressing.
Right.
Because it's odd because there are a fair few disabled characters out there, and I'm talking about not just like wheelchair, I'm talking about everything. You know, and there are a fair few out there, but it's the way they're used. Do you know what I mean? You know, we'll be bringing up a lot of characters over the course of this, and you'll find that a lot of them have been around for like 20 some 30 years, but then you look at the amount of appearances they've had or the impact that they've had on the stories, you just think, what's going on, you know?
Or certainly that, like, their story's not necessarily taking the disability into account, you know,
exactly.
You know, and I don't mean that like, you know, you can use that in a positive way, you know, as part of the story. It doesn't, just because disability doesn't mean a negative thing, does it?
No, not at all.
Yeah. So, and I know there's certainly a lot of people, when they say about disability in comics, they think, oh, what about this character? What about this character?
Well,
of course you could list off a few.
But
like Andy says, it's how they use. I mean,
exactly.
We were briefly talking before we start recording, like one of the main ones that's been around since the 60s is Professor X. But he's been in and out of that wheelchair.
Well, that kind of leads on to something else I was going to say. There's one of the biggest kind of story plot devices that gets used is the cured storyline. I'm using inverted commas, which you can't see,
perfect audio.
but it's the cure, and that's like, Professor Xavier, you know, he's up and down out of the chair every 5 minutes, it seems. It's the same with like Niles Calder from Doom Patrol. Daredevil got his blindness, you know, cured by Iron Man a little while ago. I know it didn't last, but that happened. I'm pretty sure it's happened before.
Well, obviously, in Batgirl is the prime example, isn't it? I know we talked about that last time.
Yes. Batgirl's the one that I find very frustrating, and I'm sure I said this last time as well, that obviously it kind of coincided with the New 52 since she'd been in a wheelchair since, I think it was 1980, when was it, 5 or something, when did Killer Joke? You know, so she'd been in a wheelchair, and that was an example of getting a character that had been through something horrific. We all know that the Killing Joke is quite can be considered quite a sore subject, because of the events, and that's, you know, I can understand that. So this horrific thing that she went through, they kind of completely rejigged her and made her this incredibly positive character, being in a wheelchair. You know, she kind of battled through adversity and made, you know, became this incredibly important character in the Batman family for a different reason. She served this purpose, and she was someone that so many people could look up to, and it was amazing. And then the New 52 came along, and it's like, oh, we want to put her back in the bat suit. It's like, well, there have been loads of Batgirls.
Great ones as well. Who was the one with the sort of sewed up mask across her face? I always forget her name. She was a great character,
interesting. She was great. You know, Stephanie Brown, you know, there could have been different, you know, they could have, you know, put a different Batgirl in there, and they could have kept Barbara Gordon in the chair, or they could have put Barbara Gordon back in the suit and put someone else in the chair. Do you know what I mean? Just, yeah. I think that would have maybe annoyed people as well, but it would have been sort of...
I don't know, it was kind of really rich storytelling, like there was somewhere to go with this, and there's like real weight to it.
Yeah.
And then this kind of, in one stroke, you kind of like, it's like someone, they didn't understand what they had.
That's...
And just kind of just brushed it away.
One of my favourite DC issues of like the last 20 years, I think, is a Birds of Prey issue where she's in the, is it the clock tower they work in, don't they?
Someone
breaks in and attacks her, and she sort of manages, although she still hasn't got the use of her legs, she uses the crutches like almost like martial arts weapons and uses her sort of brain to fight her way out of it. And it's a great issue. I think Gail Simone wrote it, actually. Yeah, really good. And you really cheer for her around it, you know. But then suddenly, oh no, her legs work again, and she's now Batgirl. You think, oh, really?
Yeah, exactly. It's like Dan was saying, you know, it was there was a really huge vein of stories to go with there, and she served such a huge purpose, not just in the universe for Batman, but outside as well. You know, she gave people who may have been in a similar situation or anything like that something to kind of say, well, actually, after going through something horrendous, you're not useless.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because, you know, people will feel that way if they go through a really bad accident or something like that, and they can't do the things that they used to. You know, there is this feeling that could, you know, of uselessness. And Batgirl was that. Well, sorry, Oracle rather was that sort of symbol to kind of go, well, no, you know, Batman massively relies on this person. And like you say, when that person breaks in, she's still Barbara Gordon.
She
wasn't just going to be someone that kind of lays down and kind of goes, oh crap, I'm in a wheelchair. You know,
exactly.
I'm going to kick some ass. Even if I get my ass kicked in the end, you know, I'm not going to go down without a fight, because she's still Barbara Gordon.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
Yeah, and I really felt like the comics lost something when they didn't really, because they didn't, didn't fill the void.
What I know there was a tiny bit of a, these, I actually think if it happened these days, I mean, what, 52's what, 5-6 years ago, a bit more, is it? I actually think with the furore of, you know, the internet being more powerful now, I think I like to think something more would be made of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the time, it wasn't quite, a few people like ducked their nuts around that, didn't they? And didn't say a lot because of the big shake-up that was New 52.
Is that when she got her new costume and stuff as well, with the yellow boots?
No, it was before that.
It was before that, right.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean.
I mean, Gail Simone was a big part of kind of shaping the character, and I think I remember at the time she was a bit kind of... She did have some words about it. I can't really recall her complete stance on it.
Yeah.
It must be very difficult.
I don't necessarily blame the creators involved, because I know a lot of things came down the line from DC management about, you know, this is how we want the universe. Obviously, I reckon that was. I wouldn't be surprised if that was a decision that sort of came down the line. Right, Barbara Gordon's going to be Batgirl again. Right here, go and make that, and them kind of going, oh, okay, and then having to do it because, you know, like Gail Simone, she's massive for Batgirl, so I can't imagine her just kind of being totally okay with that. I know that she's sort of defended it since then, and like I say, I'm not even 100% against. Barbara Gordon being Batgirl again. It was just the fact that they took something away without giving something back.
I think you're right, the stories that came afterwards, there may not be anything wrong with them. You know, they probably made some great stories.
But I do feel like they took something away, and I'm not, you know, disabled, but I do feel that they took something away from us as the reader who had read them, and I'd like you say, I felt that they were great stories for people who are disabled, and also for us, you know, to be able to relate to people who are disabled. And I think they took a little bit of something away from us for that, you know.
And also in the case of comic characters as role models, you know, as, you know, to those young readers, they're not. She was a massively positive sort of showing of disability, wasn't it? And how
exactly? You know. And I think that kind of highlighted that disabilities were something that could be taken away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Could be removed from the situation. Mm. Like I say, there's loads of these sort of cure storylines where, you know, the disabled character gets their ailment or their condition miraculously cured for whatever. And it's that sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? Like there's a lot of, there's a lot of kind of characters that kind of get changed in there. From their old ways to get, you know, and that can work, but
I think this to be how it's done as well, Andy, to be fair. I think,
yeah.
For example, I think we're about to start seeing a big fan following around Cyborg, for example, because he's going to be in the Justice League movie, and they've sort of hinted at it. And to me, I don't know how you feel about this, but that's a guy, I think it was, from if memory serves, he was involved in a car crash, wasn't he, as a kid, I think. Mm. And then he was, his father sort of fought for him and gave him this sort of robot body. And I kind of, I don't know why, but I kind of feel that that's like better. How do you feel?
Yeah, no, I think so. I will always sort of champion that sort of kind of outlook on it. Yes, I mean, yeah, he's going to be, I mean, he's definitely had like something horrific happen to him. And now he's sort of having, he's completely changed his life and he has to kind of roll with that. And,
but there's a pain with it as well.
Exactly. I would definitely say that. Yeah, I would, you know, would I automatically think of Cyborg as a disabled character? Maybe I wouldn't necessarily straight off, but there will be possibly people that have been through horrific things that can find something in Cyborg's origins and find something with the character that they can relate to and can, you know, through the struggle and the fact that he's become this hero. And I think, that right there, that's what it's all about. That right there, that sort of inspiration and that sort of kind of something that someone can read that and look up to that character and kind of go, yeah. Does that make sense?
I feel like that makes sense.
Yeah. No, it's incredibly interesting, that, to me. Who would you say has got it right, if you don't mind me asking, Andy?
I've always been a big supporter of Daredevil. I know when I was last on, we talked about the Daredevil TV show, we talked about, and you know, how they kind of handled disabilities and kind of handled talking about it in the dialogue and the conversation in the first episode, where Karen goes to ask him a question and he just automatically goes, yes, I've been, you know, I wasn't always blind. You know, and as I said to you guys before, like, that's happened to me many times. You sort of know the inflection in the person's voice that question is coming, and you can kind of answer it almost before it's left their mouth, and that's perfect. Yeah. But also, Daredevil, the disability plays into the hero. You know, he's blind, but he has obviously his superpowers that come with it, and the kind of work off of it, and that, for me, how they've sort of worked that into the story, you know, how they did it back in the day and how it's kind of evolved, I think is great. It's not this sort of Daredevil, he's a disabled superhero, he's just Daredevil.
Exactly.
And that's the goal.
And it also it plays on the more on the Matt Murdock side, which I always kind of I'm more interested in seeing, like the courtroom stuff, and when he's Matt Murdock, it's a case of people always underestimating him because of his blindness.
Exactly. And you think they'd have learned by now. I mean, he's been in the 60s, guys.
He looks well on it.
But that, you know, that is something that I definitely grew up with, that whole kind of underestimation because of being in a wheelchair. You know, you automatically kind of assumed that you know you're maybe weaker or whatever, and but there are many people that can kind of relate to that as well, who maybe aren't disabled in different ways, and that's why also it's great, because it's sort of transcends.
Exactly. That's what I think, that's right. You've got to be spreading the love as how it really does feel to be to have a form, you know, then there's all different types on their form of disability.
Exactly.
By the communication that comes from comics, and I think that's an ideal thing. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's definitely one that I think kind of does it right. But in terms of others, I've got.
How about Echo?
Echo?
I'm not. Echoed. Yeah. Very funny. It's the deaf character, isn't she? She's appeared in Daredevil, and
one with the handprint, isn't that
that's
right?
Correct, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, and she was in the Avengers and that sort of thing as well.
I'm not massively familiar with that character.
Okay. She was introduced, I think David Mack introduced her, was that? He did a lot of issues with Echo, wasn't it, I think?
Right. Okay, it's an interesting character. The other people seem to forget that Thor started off as a disabled character.
That's very true. As Donald Blake, he sort of had the ailment, and then, so he was sort of the disguise. But the thing is, a lot of them could be. I mean, I always think that one of the greatest examples of that is is Captain America. Especially one of the reasons I love the first movie so much is because they have that sort of character who is considered weaker, physically weaker, you know, useless, not really can't contribute in a time when everyone needed to contribute. Yeah. And he sort of, you know, he just physically didn't understand the meaning of the word quit.
It's one of those moments that when I watched the first Avengers, Tony Stark really pisses me off. I'm not sure if I've said this on the show before, but you know when Cap and Tony are having that face-off?
Yeah.
And Tony says, "Everything great about you came out of a bottle." And every time in my head, I'm like, fuck you. He was a great man before anything happened
to him. The reply to me for that is when he jumps on the grenade.
Yeah.
You know, that's the direct line, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
But what's great about that scene, about when he says, "Oh, everything about you, you know, great about you came out of a bottle," did Steve deck him?
No.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's like he's just like put on the suit then.
Yeah.
But you got to remember that to a certain extent, Tony Stark is disabled, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I know it's a MacGuffin, isn't it? Essentially?
It is and it isn't, but I've got him written down.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, me too, actually. Yeah.
You know, a lot of the stuff in the kind of in the 60s were kind of sprung out of that, like I say, with Steve Rogers and Donald Blake, and you know, a lot of the Silver Age Marvel stuff sort of started with a disability or an ailment, you know, like obviously Daredevil, Spidey wasn't particularly athletic. And that was really great, you know, I felt kind of like it didn't carry on.
Okay.
You know, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
Well, you know, for a lot of the big publishers, there's going to be a lot of people screaming at their podcasts, you know, their iPhones and stuff. How many new characters have been created in that mod? Because, like, you're right, that sort of 60s period of Marvel, like when they're all coming out, all of them were like, they were the underdogs, they were fighting against these sort of things, and it made you root for them even more.
Yeah.
But in this day and age, how many new characters are there like that?
I think we get a few in the X-Men universe. Mm. I think especially reading the new Generation X series, there's a lot of characters who are, if not perhaps disabled, quite sort of disfigured.
Yeah.
And then it's always been a metaphor for, you know, racism and homophobia. X-Men, isn't it? And I would put, you know, prejudice against people who have a disability in the same box for that.
100%. Yeah. I think I would agree. I think X-Men is a book that sort of kind of encapsulates the way minorities are in general. It can be treated, you know, just anybody who is considered different.
Yeah.
You know, so it was an allegory for racism and homophobia, but as you say, you know, prejudice against anybody that's different. And I think that's one of the most positive things that X-Men has given us over the years.
It's even sadder that it's not as prevalent, you know, because Marvel don't own the rights, so that you don't see as much of them in the comics anymore, you know.
I think
the new little wave of X-Men comics I'm absolutely loving. I think X-Men Blue, X-Men Gold, Generation X and stuff like that. Yeah, is anyone reading them or
no?
I read the first few issues of Blue and Gold.
Right.
I really liked them. I just sort of hadn't caught up with them.
I'm really enjoying them. They're some of the first things I read at the moment. I think they've gone back to that thing where they're creating a sense of family and a community.
Yeah. That's when it's at its best, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. That's what made that book great. And endured over the decades. And you know, it's good that they're getting back to that.
Yeah. How do you feel about the way that comics deals with mental illness as a disability, guys? Because I mean, it is a relevant disability, isn't it? And it's important.
Absolutely.
And
when
and it's portrayed slightly differently to me. You've got people like Two-Face, for example, maybe even like Rorschach, who've got this sort of you know, severe personality, you know, mental illness, and they can be seen as sort of almost like anti-heroes because of it in some cases. I mean, Batman is an example of that as well, isn't he?
Rorschach has a breakdown, essentially, doesn't he? Yeah, it's complete and utter breakdown, and the only way of coping it is kind of creating this character who can literally hide behind a mask to be.
Yeah,
right. He becomes that person, and it's real kind of tragic to watch. Okay, I guess people kind of like hold up elements of the film, so what a badass, but actually, it's kind of
to me, Alan Moore was making a commentary on the whole of superheroes there.
Yes, absolutely.
So they've all got a little bit of a screw missing, haven't they? That they put on these bright costumes and jump over the top of rooftops, you know.
It's a bit of an old one with Typhoid Mary.
Yep.
Okay. Right? Oh, yeah.
The sort of schizophrenia and kind of trying to win her over from the kingpin, who was getting her to do all kinds of horrible shit. And then I think eventually he does kind of win her over. I didn't keep up with the characters, so it might have changed completely. But there was one story that was really good with that.
Yeah,
I think John Romita Jr.'s run, was it?
Yeah, there was the romance, wasn't there? Because she was always a romantic interest. I think when it comes to like mental illness and stuff, I think writers have to be very careful with it, and they have to make sure they do their research, because something like that should not be used just as a plot device. Do you know what I mean? You know,
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a bad guy, so I'm going to make them this, which means
schizophrenic.
That
Yeah.
But I think that's sort of the answer for a lot of things, really. Because you know, I've obviously had this rant about disabilities in comics and stuff with a lot of my friends over the years, and you know, a few of them kind of challenge me to say, well, okay, well, what would you do about it?
Yeah.
And you kind of have to think about it, and it's a very difficult question to answer, but I kind of think that you have to, well, firstly, it would be great to get more disabled creators. And that kind of, again, that kind of goes towards most, well, pretty much all minorities, really. It'd be good to get creators, a more diverse pool of creators creating stories.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's always a good thing. You know, I've been doing Comic Cons for a few years now. Apart from Al Davison, I don't think I've really met many other disabled.
You might be right, as you met. I'm trying to think. I was trying to think before you came on, and I agree.
Yeah.
That does lead me on to the question, though. Do you think, are you happy that someone is represented fairly and realistically in a comic if they're disabled, or would you actively seek to say that you should have had an experience of disability before you write a character? How do you feel about that?
No, I don't think you do. I don't think you do, because I think we live in a world where we write comics about people that can fly.
Yeah, very true.
And do you know what I mean? And and travel through space and go on the world. So to demand someone has an experience, a first-hand knowledge of that is just completely bonkers. Yes, I'd be more interested in reading a disabled character written by or created by a disabled creator, obviously.
Yeah.
But it doesn't need to be. It's definitely not a prerequisite, I don't think.
Yeah. You're more in the area of encouraging people who perhaps do have a disability to try writing comics. Is that what you?
Yes. Right. Yes. 100%.
That's brilliant. Yeah.
But what I think is important is to have some sort of empathy. Some sort of understanding that the idea, you know, the thought to say, well, okay, I'm not a disabled person, or I do not identify with that minority that I'm going to be creating a character of. How about I maybe do a bit of homework so that I show respect to that kind of person? Because if you don't, then it turns into a plot device. And that's where I then start going ranty about Superior by Mark Miller. Because I feel that's exactly what happened with that book.
Okay.
Felt like it started good and then just sort of fell away.
What was the premise for that one? I'm not aware of that one.
Basically, the story was he kind of found the Shazam route. It was some space monkey comes along and gives this kid who has it's MS. I'm pretty sure it is MS.
Right, okay.
Pretty severe case. He used to be the school basketball team, but then, you know, was struck down by this condition and, you know, in a wheelchair and all this stuff. And then this space monkey wakes him up in the middle of the night and gives him the wish. And he wishes to be, you know, Superior, which is basically that world's Superman. It's like a movie, a fictional character.
Okay.
And then wakes up, he's this character, and he has all the powers of this fictional character, and he becomes a superhero and all this stuff. But then it turns out that the magic space monkey, spoiler alert people, is like the devil or something, and kind of wants to take his soul, and all this. It just kind of gets a bit sort of generic after a while.
Okay.
But when the kid gets the powers, he just sort of kind of goes, oh, how cool is this? I've got superpowers. Isn't that great? It's like, yeah, but if you were somebody who had lost so much and suddenly you could do stuff again, you would revel in that. Do you know what I mean? You would, there would, it's difficult with, again, without kind of coming across as, oh, I know what I'm talking about, blah, blah, blah. It's not that. It just came across very, and I managed to, I know I spoke about this last time, but I did actually manage to ask Mark Miller about it. He said about how he had someone in the family with the condition, and how he was, you know, really inspired by the image of Christopher Reeve in the wheelchair and all this sort of stuff.
I know he's a big Superman movie fan.
Exactly. And that kind of made sense, but again, it didn't feel, and again, if anybody's read that book and been completely like, you know, oh, I thought it was great, I got a lot out of it, that's brilliant, and like, these are only my opinions, and I'm totally cool if there's been some positive stuff from that book. But that would be my example of, I didn't really feel like he did his homework. Do you know what I mean? It was sort of like,
it was just a bit of a hook to write a story off.
Yeah, that's how it came across to me.
Okay.
And I felt really bad by it, and I even went back and reread it a couple of years later just to sort of kind of go, maybe I was harsh on it. And no, I wasn't. I didn't feel like I was. I felt the same. I came away feeling the same. Having reread it, and I was just like,
I haven't read it, so I'm going to read it now that you said that. I'd just like to see that. Yeah. I know what you mean. He can be a little bit bull in a china shop, can't he, sometimes? I've loved a lot of the stuff he's done. Not everything I've enjoyed, but a lot of it I really have. But I'm going to read that now. You said that, yeah.
Well, I mean, he's interesting. He's more recent stuff. I've been lapping it up. All the Jupiter stuff. You know, the one with the time travel.
Chrononauts is awesome.
Amazing. Like, loads of stuff he's been putting out. It's just, you know, I'm a huge fan of Mark Miller. Love his stuff. It was just that book just really kind of,
isn't it Captain Marvel Jr. who's the one with crutches, isn't he?
Yes. Yep.
And then he has to say Captain Marvel rather than Shazam.
Yeah. What? Why?
Yeah.
Because his powers derive from him. Yeah, his powers
derive
from Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel derived from the gods.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
he has a crutch. And then when he's Captain Marvel Jr., or Shazam Jr., shall we say now, he can basically have all of those powers and not have any disability. And that's great. That's cool. Let's see more of that.
That was the same thing with in that 52, the Black Adam character. He was seeing that Isis and her younger brother.
Osiris?
Osiris, that's it.
Yeah.
And I think when he transformed, he was fine, and like he could do the superpower stuff.
Right.
I won't do spoilers, but he kind of goes back, and a bad guy takes advantage of that. But
he does. Oh my god, that's a great moment in 52. Yeah. That really shocked me. That did. Yeah.
I presume they set it up to echo the Marvel family.
Mm. Yeah. Oh yeah, I'd imagine so. Yeah.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Yeah. I have to say, I really like Black Adam as a character. He's Namor for the DC universe to me.
I think that's quite spot on, yeah.
What's up with the ears? why is he a fucking...
That's the quote of the episode.
Evil, just so that you know that he's the evil one.
Yeah. Okay. Then we do a program on disability, and Dan picks on someone's ears.
his ears might not be a disability. You know what I mean? He's like an Egyptian guy. And then when he transforms into Black Adam, he's got Vulcan ears.
Yeah, has he got pointy eyebrows as well? Because when people draw eyebrows, they can...
I think he does.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he does.
I'm sure he does, yeah.
Because Namor's got pointy eyebrows as well, hasn't he? Because he always
looks
permanently
pissed
off.
He's an Antian, so that's fine.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, well, that makes sense.
You're not going to pick up the issue with the wings on his ankles.
Yeah, totally.
He's an underwater king.
Yeah. Well, his hair sticks up.
And just his pants. Oh, dear.
I'll tell you what, have you read him recently in Secret Empire?
No.
They're doing some interesting stuff with him. Oh, it's going to be really interesting, yeah.
Last thing I knew, I haven't read it for Marvel for a little while. Didn't he die in something? He died a couple of years ago, didn't he? I thought he was still dead, but
he hasn't died in Marvel.
It's comics, isn't it? So
Brian Level draws him. I'm a big fan of Brian's work, and Brian started drawing Marvel books now, and he does a sort of short Namor story, and at the end of it, you think, oh, something's happening here. Yeah, they're obviously. I think he's got big things coming up. He's a good character, Namor. Actually, I like that sort of sometimes villain, sometimes hero thing doing with him.
Yeah, I like that. You don't really know where he stands half the time.
Yeah.
You just know he's going to do what's in the best interest for him. And I think that's quite cool. And you can kind of do the same thing with Black Adam as well, really.
Yeah,
I know he started off as like the standard villain, but he definitely evolved into that sort of.
In 52, he was trying to almost trying to do the right thing for a lot of it, wasn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah, his people, trying to look after his state. His Kandak, was it? I can't remember the name of the place.
Right. Yeah.
And it didn't go so well. But he was trying to do the good. It's interesting to watch someone try and do something and fail, as opposed to everything they turn their hand at works brilliantly.
I think you're right. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I think that's why it's so hard to write a Superman sort of story, if you know what I mean. Because Superman was always that evergreen. When he first started, he was always that evergreen character that they had to write Kryptonite into because he was so perfect. Yeah. And I would say, I mean, I don't know, I haven't written a lot of characters, but he's probably one of the more difficult ones to write a story for.
See, that's I would say that's true. That's why I always sort of defend Superman. And when people kind of go, "Oh, Superman's rubbish because of that sort of stuff," I'm like, "No, Superman's great because of how hard it must be to write these stories. Yeah. They've got to make the stories really good."
Yeah.
And the whole thing with him having a kid now is just awesome. I love that. I'm all about that. having Superboy as his kid, and back to being married to Lois Lane. Oh, it's brilliant. It's like all that 52 nonsense never happened.
Well, you kind of like Superman, you've got to have big threats, not people getting mugged in an alley. Well, you can do that with Superman, but it's kind of it's a little bit kind of narrow-minded and doesn't really play to the character strengths.
Yeah,
don't keep removing his powers every 5 minutes. I never like storylines like that.
That's what I don't like. Or turning him evil. Do you know what? I'm so sick of the turning people evil. It's such an easy go-to, isn't it?
Probably shouldn't watch Justice League when it comes out then.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Spoilers.
But that's what everyone's saying, isn't
he's probably, he's, yeah, he's probably going to be evil for 2 minutes until all of a sudden someone gives him a slap and then he's he joins them.
I feel like they're going to do the Hulk story beat with that, two-thirds the way through when shit's going down and it's looking bad for them. Superman turns up. That's my prediction.
Oh, that could be it. That
make
could be
a, make a note of this date, because Dan Butch has just laid it on the line.
do you know something, Dan? Do you? That sounded very.
I cannot confirm or deny.
Dan was a stunt double.
That was Superman's crotch piece.
That's where I saw you before.
Yeah. Your face.
Goes. Cavill's looks too big in that. We need the stunt.
I tell you what, Dan, you'll be able to get a table for some of those so-called Comic Cons with that
back of that.
Yeah, guess for next year.
Do you know what's really scary? If what you said was true, that you'd be right. You probably could.
Oh, well, how about this question then, Andy? Has anyone, because you're in a wheelchair, ever said, "I'll tell you what, you should write a story about a superhero in a wheelchair"? You must have had that, surely.
Loads, mate. And you know what, though? I'm not against it. I have got lots of ideas. I've got stuff that I want to do. I've had that lots. Why don't you do it then? You know what you're talking. Go on, you do it. Yeah. It's
there are other aspects to me. I do.
I've got a wonderful singing voice, but no one ever wants to talk about that.
Right. London Super Comic Con, my friend.
Yeah.
That,
it's on.
Yeah, going back to the Professor X thing, I feel that's very much part of the character and what it's all about, Daredevil's kind of blindness.
Mm.
And it should be laws for writing this character. And one of the things you never do is he cannot start walking out of the wheelchair. It's just it goes against the absolutely fundamentals of it. It's almost it breaks it. It doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
Because him having the psychic powers,
he's one of the most powerful characters on the planet.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
He doesn't need to walk. There's no reason for it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've got absolutely no problem with them doing early stories. I really liked X-Men First Class, and it made complete sense that he wasn't in a wheelchair in that film.
Right. Yeah.
And in the next one, he is in a wheelchair, but then he's taking this drug to suppress his powers, and that allows him to not be in a wheelchair. But then he stops taking the drug, and then to get his powers, he's back in the chair. So I kind of liked that as well, because it was sort of the only way you can have his power is if he's in a wheelchair.
Which creates that dramatic choice, doesn't it? It creates it's a story beat that actually sort of makes sense.
This again, it just comes across as a as a thing that can just be taken away.
Mm.
Disabilities can just be taken away.
And would you say, on the whole, that's probably more in the hands of the public? It's more in the sort of publishers, isn't it, and the higher ups?
Sometimes depends. But I think that's definitely a possibility. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think with Xavier, I think it's sort of a, what can we do with him now?
I think you're right.
It's kind of
we need him to go into space on a spaceship. Right, let's get him on his feet. You know, it's almost like that. Yeah. Yeah.
It's got to be kind of well handled, because when you've got characters coming back from the dead alien spacecraft where they can do all this technology, and it's like, well, this can be sorted, but you kind of, as a writer, you've got to not go down that route. That is true.
You know, if you've got all of this epic amounts of alien tech running around that can bring characters back from the dead or whatever, when why aren't we curing this, that, and the other? That's a very good point, and it's I do acknowledge that.
The same question is someone like, why does, like, Clark Kent wear glasses? Everyone can tell it's Superman. It's like, well, there's a certain amount of disbelief you've got to kind of add to this.
Yeah.
And start applying the same things to characters like Daredevil and Xavier. You've got to apply the same thing to that, because otherwise it gets a bit silly. Absolutely, totally agree.
One of the interesting ones, I think, is the Lizard. So the Lizard is a guy who looks to transform, you know, to bring back mm-hmm. his lost arm.
Yeah.
And so it's a motivational, understandable. Yeah. The Lizard isn't completely that bank robbing villain like a lot of them are, is he?
No.
There's something that is part of the story that is his disability, mm-hmm. even though he appears as a sort of two arms, two legs character after the transformation. But he is this guy who does it for that reason. What's your thoughts on that, Andy?
I think that's a great example, actually. I do. Yeah. That's totally understandable. That driving force of wanting to get back what you've lost. I mean, that runs right through so many characters. And it's definitely one of those ones that can kind of send people off good or bad.
Yeah.
And obviously through the sort of mutation that he gets through his experiments, you know, he goes down the essentially the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde avenue where he sort of kind of takes over.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's one of the things as well in the first couple of Spidey films, and you've got, I can't remember the character's name before, he's the Lizard, Doc Connors. It's sort of frustrating that the kind of the groundwork was laid for that character in the first two films. I'm not sure if he's in the third one, and then that never had the kind of the payoff with him having his whole big arc.
Yeah.
But then I think in The Amazing Spider-Man they just kind of screwed the pooch and he just like, oh, I'm going to be the Lizard. He just turned into the Lizard for some reason. I can't really recall.
Yeah.
Well, he did follow the kind of the storyline of the character. You know, I've lost my arm, I'm trying to grow it back. But it did sort of seem a bit, oh, now I'm the Lizard.
Yeah.
There was a weird, as much as I like Reese Evans, that was a weird choice.
Yeah.
If I had to pick anyone in the world who I thought is this sort of super intellectual scientist, I wouldn't probably go with Reese.
No.
But, you know.
You want the complete opposite of someone evil. You want someone really nice and, well, this is why I do, nice.
Because that was the whole point of his character, wasn't it?
Yeah, the contrast of the character, the Jekyll and Hyde aspect.
Mm.
Mm.
So it makes it more jarring when he's the horrific monster as opposed to, he's a bit
pretty
of a shit
a
anyway.
For my life.
So when do you turn into the good guy?
Now we had one character that I'm quite interested to find out more about. When we're asking about like sort of characters online and stuff, I know Tom Curry brought up. He said, "Isn't Hawkeye deaf?"
Yes, he is. Isn't
he?
Yeah. We're not completely. Wears a hearing aid, doesn't he?
Oh, he wears a hearing aid. Does
yeah.
Yeah. And I know, for instance, Sam Webster replied. Really? I didn't know. And I'm the same. I didn't really. And it seems to be it drops in and out depending on what they want to do with the story.
But that's okay, because I read a lot of the Fraction Archer run. I've got a lot of it, and it does come up. They did an entire issue of just silence, but with pictures.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, which was great. But if you know, so I can't remember if he did carry on being, and he, you know, if he does carry on being deaf and has an hearing, I'm going to assume he does. Let's go with he does. And I think that's great that people aren't completely sure sometimes. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Because,
of course,
you know, the people. I know that kind of goes against what I'm saying, where it's like, oh, representation. People want to see it, but you know, if someone who has a hearing impediment and wears a hearing aid, you're not necessarily going to know.
No,
and And I kind of like that.
I think you're right. I think if people went, if every issue he went, by the way, I'm wearing a hearing aid, people would get sick of it.
Absolutely.
I know Tom posted on the Twitter, there was just a page, I think it was Hawkeye and Deadpool, and it's just Hawkeye's looking at him, and he said, I can't read lips through a mask. You know, it's just that little moment, and so Deadpool sort of lifts his mask up a bit to talk to him.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And it says everything, doesn't it? You know.
Yeah.
That's going at it in the same way that it's very much a sort of Daredevil tip, that, isn't it? You know, where Daredewel gets handed a bit of paper or newspaper to read and he can't, or that sort of thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
But I did not know. I will hold my hand up and say I did not know Hawkeye was deaf.
Nerd Roots used to play the Marvel Superheroes role playing game back in the day, and he had these little character cards, and Hawkeye's was like he was deaf. I was like, I didn't know that before reading this little thing.
Okay.
That's cool. See, I've never been a huge Hawkeye fan. Like I say, I read the Fraction Hydra run and it was brilliant. And it does come up on that, but I wasn't sure if it was something that was new or was just sort of something that was just for this run. So that's cool to know.
I'm not sure it started. I'll be honest with you. I'm not certain when it's or who wrote it first or anything like that. Yeah.
No,
that's cool.
And it's certainly that sort of got lost for the Ultimate line, didn't it? I think.
It's sort of super.
You can see for miles and hear it.
But he changed quite a lot anyway, didn't he? Because he became that sort of agent. You know, almost what we're seeing in the movies.
I would definitely say it's the movies. But I'm going to almost go against completely what I always say, but I'm kind of okay with that too.
Right.
It's fine. It's whatever.
It always comes down to, is it well done? That's what we look for. Is it convincing?
The point you made earlier about people writing, it's good to write what you know, but if you've got compassion and you can understand that and write that, you can do this kind of thing. Whereas the idea of not being able to write anything you've no direct experience of, or you'd be so limited into what you're writing.
I mean, the world is so full of so many different types of people that how far do you drill down into that theory? And I think as long as you do it with a bit of heart and a bit of intelligence and a bit of research, then it's good enough for me. Do you know what I mean?
I
wholeheartedly agree. But I do think we do need to get more, and obviously everyone has said this as well, but we do need to get more diverse creators out there. I would love to see more disabled creators. I've been going to cons for ages, and as I say, apart from Al Davison, I don't think I've ever seen another wheelchair bound creator. I may have met others that have invisible disabilities, shall we say? But I mean that's kind of almost on me as well, because I can't travel very far. I do the ones in London and I do the ones in Kent and I'll do Thought Bubble, but I generally can't travel very far, so other creators may have the same issue. There might be a disabled creator who lives way up north who can't travel very far, so I haven't met them.
Of course.
But I would absolutely love to meet some. So if there are any of you out there, guys,
would you say also because of the internet and social media and stuff, the world has almost never been a better place for there are writers and artists who have never met before because they're on different sides of the planet. Yep.
True.
So in that aspect, there's nothing stopping anyone trying to make comics, is there?
That's absolutely true.
do you think there's an area of disability that we're really missing? Do you think there's there's a few characters in wheelchairs, there's a few characters who are blind or deaf, do you think there's an area that we're missing out on specifically?
It's difficult for me to say because
I'm not saying you should be a representative. Just curious what
I wouldn't like to say, not because of that, but because I think they just sort of need to this is going to be really a big cop out, but just do a little more of just maybe everything.
I've
kind of looked into it on Marvel and DC and the independents, and the indies, there are quite a few cool characters, but independent comics don't have the same responsibility in a way, because they're not creating massive universes.
Yeah.
You know, like Marvel and DC have universes. So to have this universe and sort of say, like with Marvel, check it out. Like, there are Skrulls everywhere. But you know what? You don't see any in a wheelchair. Well, not Skrulls, but, you know, like characters, you know. Mm. It's just like, okay. You know, again, it kind of goes back to that representation of just being acknowledged that we exist, that we are there.
I think Marvel was based on people attempting it. I genuinely do.
I think
when you look at what we talked about already, Thor, Iron Man, the X-Men, Spider-Man, even the Hulk to a certain extent, you know, I think it was based on the idea that, you know, we need to be representative of people around the world and to show the problems that are around the world. And I think you're right. During the 90s, for example, we just had a lot of people who gritted their teeth and fired big machine guns.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it does go in waves. And I think the responsibility of people has come back, I think. I like to think at the moment is creeping back again.
Yeah, you know? I think so. I would like to think so. I know there's
always more to be done, Andy, I think, you know.
I think you're right. There is always more to be done, but I do, like I say, they are out there. And I probably find more in the independents, because it's probably, like I say, it's probably easier for them as well to be able to do that. But you're right, Marvel have, in the years, made attempts to sort of represent as many people as they can over the years. I would say that's a fair assessment. Yeah. Mm, DC have done it too. DC have kind of done their, you know. Again, as they are out there, like I say, you get
the right character, you get the right writer, or someone who treats it right, and you know, there's a reason we can actually bring up these certain characters, you know, because they probably have been done well in the past and stuff.
Yeah.
But talking about the independent ones, you know, it's easy. We've obviously been focusing on, you know, the big two sort of characters, but that brings to mind like the independent characters in terms of representation there, which will tie into our poll in a minute. So you said there's some characters out there you think have done quite well. What ones come to the top of your mind when you think of that?
Well, I think, I mean, I'm a massive Invincible fan, as I know you guys are too, especially you, Dan. I see you.
Love it.
I would say Rex Robot is quite, because, you know, he starts off as this is spoilers here, I'm really sorry guys, but you really should have read it by now. But we, you know, we find out that Rex isn't, you know, a robot. Well, where he was just called Robot originally, you know, he's kind of made out to be this sort of artificial intelligence, and then you find out that actually no, he's this sort of kind of severely deformed human that's controlling all of these avatars all over the place, and that he's been being a superhero through all this sort of machinery, and kind of hiding it from the world because he was so sort of ashamed of the way he was. And then kind of proceeds to clone a body and kind of go into this dashingly handsome, rugged young man. And then shit really got weird. but I thought that was quite cool. That was kind of nice. Like, that was an interesting turn that, you know, you sort of led for, I think it's quite a few years in the comics before you find out.
I mean, he ultimately has to kind of get two villains involved in helping him out, and has to kill himself.
Yeah, he does.
He essentially copies his consciousness into this new body.
Yeah.
His consciousness is still in his old one. That's pretty tragic.
It is very tragic. And now he gives, you say he gives up his own life to sort of give his next life, shall we say, a better chance. But I can't, you know, that kind of, I really like that personally.
That's really well handled.
Yeah. But also Monster Girl in Invincible as well. She has a condition where she turns into a giant monster, kind of like a Hulk. But every time she changes back, she gets a little younger. That was, you know, so it's kind of degrading her.
Yeah.
Every time she's a hero. I think she's like in her 30s, but she has the body of like a 15-year-old at one point. You know, it gets really kind of quite harsh. And again, Robot, kind of falls in love with her because he sees this person that has issues like he's had, and he helps her out. And that was kind of cool too. I liked that.
Another Kirkman character that I think is quite a major one is Rick Grimes from The Walking Dead. You know, it's such a it's been going so long now that, you know, some people probably just don't even think about it, but, you know, he had a massive traumatic scene in the comics which left him without his right hand. I think he was right hand. Is it his right hand? I can't remember, but he lost one of his hands, and he and you see that journey of him having to learn to use the other hand. Do you know what I mean? And you see him now, and he's just like, you know, he's the leader of everyone. He's super capable, you know. That's another. I think Kirkman's pretty good at writing those sort of characters, I think.
Yeah,
the sort of
I think he is.
Yeah.
And I'm always in awe of Kirkman.
Yeah.
Because of just the complete, you know, workload he has. Yeah. I mean, he's got two books. They're in there, hundreds.
I mean, people may, you know, they'll probably fire shots at him because of this, that, or the other, or how popular he is. But whenever I usually read his stuff, it's some of the best character moments, certainly some of the best emotional moments, and I just think, you know, God, this bloke's good. He's just really good. Invincible and The Walking Dead, I think he rarely misses a beat.
He puts his characters in jeopardy, and they go through experiences which change them, and they keep moving forward and growing, which there's a lot of comics that want to kind of keep their characters in a kind of loop, and they just keep doing the same kind of things over and over, which when you see him get injured and grow, and so much more satisfying.
But he understands consequences.
Yeah,
that's what it is. There are consequences to their actions, and they last. They you know, and they keep, you know, and I think he's very good at that.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it.
Yeah. So outside of the Kirkman universe, are there any others
that spring to mind? Well,
I know you're going to talk about one in your recommends, aren't you? Actually,
yeah, I am. But I want to just touch upon a couple of little things. There was Handicaped. I think you guys brought that up last time.
Yeah, it was on the slash. I looked it up. And they're sadly not doing it anymore. Well, they're doing other work, but I don't think they're producing that anymore.
But I mean, that's sad. That's because it was really great. I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
I mean, I hadn't caught up with it, but I you know, after I was on the show last time, I went and found it and really enjoyed what I was reading.
Mm. Cool.
They laid all the groundwork, and then it was like, come on, you're ready for the payoff. And then they're a little too good. They got poached for someone else. But there you go.
I also kind of want to give a shout out to Department of Ability.
That's exactly who I had on my list to mention.
Ah, brilliant.
Because they seem to be.
I read up on them as well, yeah. It's a really nice story.
Yeah, they, you know, they're doing some real good out there, and it's a really nice story they've got. And I follow them on Twitter, and I kind of try and keep up to date. And that's really nice. You know, he just wants to do something for his
kids. Yeah, so people who don't know the story, he's got a daughter. Is she's disabled? Is she in a wheelchair? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think she's got what I've got, which is a spina bifida.
Ah,
I'm pretty sure she's got that.
Right.
And he sort of kind of turned her into a superhero.
Yeah.
In a wheelchair, and it's kind of got all these kind of gadgets. And it's lovely, and that's.
Yeah. I think he was flicking through some TV channels and just didn't come across anyone. He was trying to sort of keep her amused, as you do with your kids, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Dan White, his name is, isn't it? And he was flicking through some TV channels and couldn't find anything. So he thought, I'm going to write something here. And it came out of that. And it's been going over a year now, I think, hasn't it?
Yeah. I think so. I think, it could be longer, actually.
Oh, okay.
I think he's been about longer. I'm not sure if the book has, but I think the idea of it and the brand, shall we say, but the idea of this thing, you know, I think has been around for longer. But yeah, I mean, it's great. It's a positive thing. And that, for me, is perfect.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But there's one other one I want to just quickly mention.
Yeah, please.
Because I was slightly involved with it. There's a character in the independent sensation known as the Kill Screen by those daredevils, Mike Garley and Josh Sirwell. I hope I said your name right there, Bal. I don't care if I didn't. there's a character in it that I remember I got an email from Mike saying, I'm putting a disabled character in, I'd really like your advice. I said, okay. He sent me through this kind of little couple of questions about, you know, being disabled in a post-apocalyptic world. I kind of just went, yeah, I'd be fucked, mate. But you know, but what I really liked about it was that he reached out and he kind of, you know, was doing the research. He obviously knew me, and could help him out, and I tried to as best I could. And it was just nice. The character doesn't pop up massive amounts, but there is a character in a wheelchair in this universe just being there. you know, and there's this really nice moment where the main character gets tricked into calling him Wheels, which has happened to me, you know, loads. So it felt very realistic, and that for me, that was, I mean, I know they're my friends, but I do think it was a really positive gesture to you know, check it out. There are more people in this world rather than just your average people trying to survive.
And certainly, if you're going to create a character, if you're going to write a character that has a disability, or, you know, is nothing like you in particular, you know, don't be afraid to ask people who have experience of this, you know, because they'll tell you. You know, a lot of people are a bit too timid and don't want to ask, or feel as if they can't. And and I think they, you know, everyone totally should, because it just makes the stories better, it makes the characters better, and it makes the whole understanding of the issues better as well.
Yeah, we were talking about this the other day, and I've been giving some advice to someone about something I know about, and it's no different to that.
No,
you know,
it isn't.
You just need to, if you're going to write a character, and you thought, what would he do here, or how would he do that, or what would happen there, you know, then you ask advice about it, don't you? You know,
You do, and it just, like I say, it just meant a lot to me that someone would do that, would make that sort of kind of do that, go that far to sort of, well, say go that far. It wasn't that far, was it? I mean, he just asked a question, but it was nice that consideration was taken.
What do you want, you to write his book for him? What's going on?
Don't even get me started.
No, I've spoken to Mike actually about a couple of things as well. We've had a chat about stuff he's writing, and he asked me advice, and it's good. Yeah, it's a good thing to do. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Who wants the results of the poll?
Oh, yes, please.
Yes.
Yeah. We asked our listeners and the people online, we said, we want your votes. Where can you find the best representation of disability in comics? There was just three choices. That's all you need. You got your Marvel, you got your DC, and you got your Independence. You know, which one do you think everyone voted for? Gentlemen.
I personally voted for Marvel. This is just because I believe that their hearts have been in for many years in the right places. But no, now cool our crowd are, they'll all vote for the Independents, won't they?
Okay.
Yeah.
And Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd probably echo Tony.
Andy?
Marvel.
I will go with the guys. I do think they voted for the Independents, yeah.
You're not wrong. It was one of the most uneven polls we've had in quite some time.
No, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
In last place with 7% was DC.
Okay. That's a shame. Yeah.
In second place with 15% was Marvel. So 78% of people who voted thought that Independence is where you can find the best representation of disability in comics.
And you know what? I think the reason why, and I think it kind of comes across, like I said before, about how it's easier, is because all these characters we sort of talked about, apart from maybe Professor X and Daredevil, a lot of them have been kind of smaller characters within the books.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? There's not been many, like apart from those ones that I spoke about, kind of having their own titles or being kind of a big part of the book.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's fair. I mean,
I think sometimes it just doesn't occur to you as well, Andy. Doctor Strange is a magician because he's sucked his hands up.
Yeah,
that's true.
You know, but it never occurs to you, does it? You just don't think.
Forgot about the Thing's girlfriend.
Oh, Alicia.
Yeah.
Oh, she's a great example.
And that's a cracking
character who becomes a sculptor. You know.
Yeah, there's lots of. I mean, the one that pops up more recently, Flash Thompson.
Yes.
Agent Venom.
Good.
Yeah, great, great, and he had his own book. So there.
Cracking book, Andy, as well. I tell you, still be going now. I love that book. Yeah.
Oh, was that when he was like the sort of riot gear sort of looking?
Yeah, he was an ex army vet. I think he'd been to Kandahar or something like that, I think.
Yeah. So, I think Marvel have definitely, for me, I would agree with you, Tony, that Marvel have probably tried a bit more than and again, that's not, I'm not trying to be down on the other, like on DC and other things like that, because like I said, I know it's a difficult issue to deal with. But yeah, there are maybe more get their own books. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. It's easy for me to say that. I know.
Yeah. and write a good book, we will buy it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I have a great faith in the comics community that we buy books that are good. We don't buy books because it's, you know, this or that or you know. I think we enjoy the, when a book is good, it does hit, doesn't it? Hopefully,
yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And I don't kind of want to see too many characters where, you know, just say you had a disabled person that is the hero, and all your spotlight and all your marketing is on this disability or whatever. Yeah. It should be a great character who can do amazing things.
Yeah.
And just part of their character is they're disabled.
Yeah, if there was a superhero comic came out that was called, you know, I don't know, Disabled Core or something like that, we'd all roll our eyes, wouldn't we, and go, oh, God, what's this about?
It's funny you should mention that because my new book... But no, you're absolutely right.
Because these things shouldn't be used as like cheap pops. They shouldn't be like it shouldn't be cheap marketing for a quick buck. You know, create longer lasting characters. There's like we're saying, there is a bit of a void for this that can be filled with really characters that can just do a lot more than just be great characters. They can inform. Mm-hmm. And I mean, and what we've been saying, this goes, it isn't just disabilities, this goes across all.
Absolutely, you know. Yes, 100%. I think
the nature of comics as well is that it's read by people. We are a little bit loner. There's a loner quality to a comic reader, isn't there? Because it's a solitary hobby. And when you're sitting there and, you know, you're in your bedroom or as a kid or, you know, you're on the train or whatever you're going to be doing reading the comic, you do want to be able to relate a little bit sometimes, don't you? It does make your day sometimes. You think, oh, he's done that, or he's reading, even down to, oh, he's reading that novel, or, you know, there's a little insight into that person that you can connect with. I think it's always a good thing. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you've got to be careful with, if you kind of say, right, this character is about this issue, you kind of confine yourself a little bit that maybe that's all that readers will see of that character. Mm. It's a novelty, and it can never be more than that. So kind of there are comics today that some of in the independent crowd that sort of say this comic is about this issue, and it's like, well, if these issues can be handled in the story, but if you kind of just make the whole identity about that, what else can it ever be?
See, that's what you've hit the nail on the head, and that's always been one of my reasons for kind of being a bit apprehensive about doing a disabled character.
I see.
Because I've always thought that could be a problem. And I kind of feel like I couldn't do it until I was a better writer so I could negate that problem. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's more the whole, if you're kind of using that's your selling point.
Exactly, mate, like, exactly.
When the press release, that's the thing. Like, Daredevil is the man without fear. He's not the man who can't see.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's not the thing of the character. It's,
I think when it cheapens it, doesn't it, if you say, exactly. Right, this comic is just about, you know, people without thumbs or something, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you think, oh, yeah.
I want to see a comic about that.
I don't have thumbs, guys. So it's just like, what?
Holding a mug is really difficult.
No.
Oh God! We're over halfway now. It tends to go ridiculous, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, as always, it is an ongoing discussion, though, isn't it?
And
I think we're all about the positive on this show. And when we say, you know, probably when we said we're going to talk about this topic on this show, maybe some of our listeners or people who listen to the show thought, oh, maybe they're just going to rag on all the things that are being done wrong. That's not what we're here for.
And it's not what we've done, I don't think, mate, either.
Yeah. And,
no, I hope not, because like I say, there are so many things that have been done right. It's just the visibility of it. Yeah. You know, when you were talking about the guys from Department of Ability trying to find something and not finding it, so they're making their own one, that's great, but then they just need to be easier to find. I think that's the crux of it, right there. We've all acknowledged, because we've discussed them all, well, not them all, but a lot of them, about there are these characters out there. But let's make them more visible. Let's make them easier to access, you know, be easier accessible, or other things that are real English. I'll get there in a minute.
and also, mate, I'd like to make the point, I don't think we point it out yet, to make them all ages as well.
Yeah.
I think that's very important for kids, you know, with a disability or, you know, a problem. And, you know, I think that's how we all grew up with comics, you know, and I think it needs to be there for some kids, I think, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was... during the week, Andy, we were tweeting about responding to one of the Awesome Comic podcast tweets about disabled characters, and I brought up Silhouette from The Warriors, and there was a chap that said, like, when he was growing up and he was on crutches all the time, he loved that character, because that was someone in the comics that shared what he was going through.
He was cool. He went on to talk a lot about X-Men and how he would love to have been able to create a comic about a disabled character from a disabled point of view. And an artist kind of replied to him and said, "Oh, maybe we should talk." I don't know if anything kind of came from that, but that was kind of really nice. These guys were sort of having a dialogue about X-Men and disabilities and stuff like that. I'm not sure if the artist was disabled, but he was sort of kind of going, you know, let's have a chat, maybe.
Yeah,
That was kind of cool. But yeah, that's something, isn't it? That guy, he connected with Silhouette, wasn't it? And yeah, that's great. I love that.
Yeah.
No, that's good news. I hadn't seen that, actually. Oh, we must follow that up, actually.
Yeah,
and see what happened with that.
And there's opportunities out there, I think, for, you know, creators who maybe, like we're saying, we want more disabled creators. We want more creators of all representations.
Is there an anthology in the small press in regards to sort of this sort of thing?
Ooh.
I'd be very interested in seeing that.
Yeah.
I don't believe so, but I mean, and if also, there is, I'd love to know.
In terms of what sort of anthology will it be as well? I mean, because I know people like Singing Dragon and stuff like that.
Yes, very good point.
There must be some kind of books.
I have to say, they'd probably be right behind that. If you could say, you know, this is especially for kids, I think they would love that. You know, this is how you can be a hero, but you know, even though you suffer from this or this or this, you know,
So there you go.
That's some.
Yeah. Well, as always with all of our topics, I always feel like we're just touching the tip of an iceberg.
Yeah.
If we were all in a pub, we'd be talking about this all night.
But Absolutely.
But thank you very much for joining us, Andy.
That was pretty good, Andy. Yeah, I really enjoyed your last appearance, mate. Yeah. One of my favourites, personally.
You're not allowed to go anywhere, by the way. You've got to
Don't go anywhere.
Oh, you're actually letting me out now. The door's still locked. Okay.
You've still got the key, haven't you, Dan? You haven't got rid of the keys. He's not going to get out, is he? We call it the green room. It's actually a cage under some stairs.
Yeah, the green is actually just moss.
The smell of damp is all right, though, isn't it, Andy? You know, we put a Glade candle in for you. I don't know.
Also, that's what that was. Right?
Yeah, that candle, I think, is Eau de Sweaty Gooch. I think.
I'm really glad that I didn't say what I was going to say.
Now, silly aside, if there's anything you want to email us about this subject or your thoughts, or if there's anything that you want to bring to our attention, then email us at awesomecomicspod@gmail.com and we'll probably discuss it in a future show. You never know. Now, gents, do we have any shout outs?
I've got one, actually. It's for my bud and old table mate and collaborator Ed Traquino, who has done something for us. Now we can't reveal it yet because it's lined up for a show that's next month, I think, isn't it, that we're thinking of doing. Bear in mind somebody who might appear in it. But he's done something for us. We absolutely loved it. We've been going nuts about it all weekend.
It's amazing.
It's mind blowing, and it's shit because none of you will know what we're talking about.
I was looking and thinking, how can I share this? And I can't.
Yeah, but it'd be
going. We'll tell you off air, Andy. We'll tell you what it is off air, but the rest of the people will have to.
Yeah, in the next few months it'll be going. In the next few weeks it'll be going live. Mm-hmm. But I guarantee you will enjoy Ed's work. I know a couple of our listeners have clicked over there and had a look at stuff. If you go to www.edtraquino, which is EDTRAQUINO.com, or go to Feliqs Comics, Feliqs Comics, and you can see some of his work. Ed is basically someone who tried to get into 2000 AD and should well be drawing 2000 AD, as everyone who knows him agrees. But he's moved into doing storyboarding. He's actually storyboarding The Tick at the moment. And he's
amazing.
Yeah, he's fucking brilliant. Brilliant artist.
I can't wait for that series.
One of the funniest guys I know, and I'm seeing him again in New York, so little shout out to Ed. So get over to his website and have a look at his work and buy some of his books which are available. Don't buy any ones I've been involved with him with, though, because most of my writing is terrible. But everything else he does without me has been very good. There you go. Yeah.
All of my shout outs are pretty much on the Cardiff Expo special, which we got a little bit of audio from that show. It was a great show. So that'll probably be available in the next few days. So there you go. We're giving you a little bit extra as always. So there you
go. Should give a little shout out to Sarah Harris's and your and a number of others' project, which is a small press signing next Saturday, isn't it? Did you want to do that?
Yes, this Saturday, which is it the 15th? At the Incredible Comic Shop in Swindon, there's going to be a small press signing. I think it's between 1 and 4. I believe.
But I don't know.
Small Press Day was obviously this past weekend, but Small Press is still alive and kicking in Swindon.
Yes, yeah.
There's going to be a bunch of creators.
Swindon's always a little bit behind the fashion, isn't it? Let's be fair. Well, Swindon.
I think it's one of those events that it would have been nice to coincide with Small Press Day. But it just means you just get 2 weeks in a row of small press.
Yeah. Everyone who's at it was going to Cardiff, weren't they? I think.
Or they were in their respective sort of areas doing an event, and you got the likes of Matt Garvey, Nick Prolix, Gav Mitchell, and Emily Owen, and you got Sarah Dunkerton and Matt Gibbs. Matt Gibbs is going, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he is. Yeah. I had a good chat with Matt and Sarah at Cardiff. Yeah, good laugh it was.
Yeah,
making me laugh. Yeah,
and some scrope called Vince Hunt.
Yes, with a rather large head.
I've got apparently there's a large poster in the window of the shop, and my head is bigger than my actual head. And if you see me in real life, you know my actual head is quite big.
Well, you've had a proper like cut and blow dry, haven't you? You were looking quite smart yesterday.
Yeah, I still look like a human Funko. But,
this is to make up by the fact that when I walked in 5 minutes late and everyone was there, he went, "Gore, what's happened to you?" Because I'd had a shave.
What?
Yeah, I know. He's missing the tash.
Oh, mate.
I know. You still got the sexy though, Andy. You know, mate.
I don't think I do now.
Yes. So don't if you're in that sort of area or we can make it, then come along because I think it's going to be a great day actually. So there you go. Anyone else got any shout outs?
A quick shout out for the Spider Forest webcomic anthology. It's currently on Kickstarter. They've got, when you listen to this, it'll be 4 days to go. They're a tiny way behind their target, but it's a 132 page book, and the base thing, this is so well researched. There's not a lot of money and you can get a load of great comics, so bid for it. Even if it's the digital version, you'll do well out of it. Cool. So go check that out. The link will be in the show notes.
Nice. Andy, as you're here, do you want to give a shout out to anyone?
Well, I just the Department of Ability again, really. That was kind of my shout out. You can check out their stuff on Twitter, which is Dept of Ability, so DEPT of Ability. So that's the Twitter handle. And then departmentofability.com, and kind of check out their stuff, follow what they're doing, keep up to date, and support it.
Awesome.
Nice. Really?
Brilliant as always. Right, you guys out there, you want to know about some recommendations, don't you? What should you get in the coming months and weeks? So it's the recommendation section. Tony, do you want to go first?
I'm recommending a book which has just started its second mini series. I think the impression I get is it's adopting the old BPRD thing where it's doing 5 issues. Stops for a couple of months, back to 5 issues again. It's actually by Dark Horse, same as BPRD, and it's Briggs Land. Has anyone read this yet?
Nope. I've seen the cover. I've seen the cover.
Yeah, I know I was ranting about it to you two this week, wasn't I, on the phone? But Briggs Land, and the new series, which has just started, I think the second issue is out, I think next week, it's called Briggs Land Lone Wolves. It's written by Brian Wood. I love Brian's writing, I really do. Northlanders. I was a big fan of Northlanders, and I think he does some really interesting character work.
Did he do the one about the ship?
The Massive, yes, he did.
Yeah,
which was another good one. Mm. Art by Mac Chater, who's a UK-based artist, I do believe.
He's great.
Very briefly, I spoke to him at Thought Bubble a couple of years ago. Colours by Lee Lowridge. Covers by Tula Lote. And Matthew Woodard, I think his name is. The Briggs family, it's basically a sort of separationist group a sort of sovereign nation kind of Waco type setup thing. So the Briggs family have created a separationist community. They've got 100 square miles of America near to the Canadian border, which they own, and they've set up a whole sort of town in there, full of people who are sort of trying to get away from America as it is in the present day, and they want to go and live their own lives, sort of thing. They're very anti-government, and they've got their own sort of sets of rules. Jim Riggs is running the business. He's both a criminal and a sort of kind of cult head almost. But he's been put to prison after being convicted of conspiracy to murder. Now, there's no spoilers, because the first issue starts with his wife, who becomes very much the central character for a lot of what goes on in this series, goes in and says, look, I'm divorcing you. I've had enough. This is right. It's done. Enough is enough. And you're cut out. And the first few issues are about her sort of power struggle to take over. And that does continue throughout the series. She's got three sons, Caleb Briggs, who's the oldest. And he's one of these guys who looks like a bit like a sort of bodybuilder who's crossed with an accountant. So he's got sort of a parting in his hair, and he wears glasses, and he wears a suit. But underneath, you can see he's a beast, you know. And when he takes his shirt off, he's got neo-Nazi tattoos on it. And it's very much sort of mafia Sons of Anarchy style villain. So he's got a sort of, he looks like Henry Rowling, if Henry Rowlings was an accountant. That's kind of where I go with that, you know. Second son is Noah Briggs, who's his sort of middle brother, and he's a sort of, looks like your sort of typical crazy meth head redneck kind of guy, like gun nuts. When you first meet him in the series, he's robbing a load of drug dealers and stealing their drugs as they lay around him all dead. And the third, and to me the most interesting son, is Isaac Briggs, who's the youngest, and he comes, he's left the family for a short amount of time, and he's gone to fight in Afghanistan for the army, and he joined the army, and he's now, his mother collects him from the airport in the first issue. And it's very much a power play around these characters. And it's neither sensible or peaceful, this sort of power play. And there's a lot of gun shootouts. There's a little bit of a sort of Sons of Anarchy, maybe, sort of mood to it. It's that sort of series. Five issues, the first one. And as I say, it's continued into Briggs Land Lone Wolves. It's absolutely cracking read. I'd say Wood, he writes excellent characters. Everyone is three-dimensional in this book, and everyone has their own sort of secrets. You can tell who everyone is immediately. They're easily distinguishable from each other, but they've all got their secrets, and they all change. You see them changing, and you begin to realise more sort of motivations as it comes. Mac Chater, I have to say, most valuable player in this comic for me, really good. He's got that... I'm going to put him in the same, very like a sort of general wheelhouse of someone like Mitch Gerards, maybe Gabriel Hardman, maybe Mark Lamin, maybe Sean Phillips. Somewhere he's a mixture of all those people put together, if that makes sense. He's got a sort of great sort of sense of anatomy and realistic, the way people move. He's great with the action sequences as well. There's a really great sequence where there's a shootout. Just on a sort of... a road where no one else is there, and there's these three people arrive, and the shootout, so I won't spoil it, but the shootout happens. Really, really good. If I had one small niggle, there's one scene, there's a character in it, I won't spoil it, but suddenly I went, yeah, that's a little too close to Denzel Washington. There's a little bit of... everyone uses photographs as reference, I appreciate that, but there's a couple of points where I go, little too Denzel for me, but absolutely brilliant. Love his stuff. Great flow, a seamless storytelling by him. I know he's... I've seen a couple of sort of... commissions by him around the Punisher, or seen him, you know, sketch the Punisher. He needs a Punisher book, this bloke. Definitely give him a Punisher book. I caught up, I read the first trade in one sitting. Really, really readable, really enjoyable book. And I've immediately put the second series on my pull list. Yeah, very good. So Briggs Land, anything around that, go out, you can get the first trade reasonably cheaply. I read it on Comixology, and then now I'm getting the monthlies. Very, very good. Good stuff.
Nice. You're getting back into your Comixology, aren't you, Tony?
I am. Look at that. Yes, from my holiday, because I thought, I don't want to fill my suit, because I don't want to fill a suitcase just with comics, that's what I'm like. So I just filled my iPad up with stuff, and I'm quite enjoying the guided view. Getting into it.
Yeah. If it's done right, you know, it can really add a lot, can't it? Especially some dramatic beats. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, bless. Dan, what's your recommendation for this week?
My recommendation this week, I purchased it only a couple of days ago, was the Pull List, the latest issue. The focus on this issue is primarily about Kickstarters. It's called The Secrets of Kickstarter, 10 Essential Tips for Success from a Panel of Experts.
Did you say tips or tits?
I wish I said tits.
Tits are essential, to be fair.
If you want to sell a good, do a good Kickstarter. So we got Mike Garley, John Late, Rob Jones, Matt Rourke, Ken Reynolds, Mike Sandbrook, Chris Welsh. They all kind of offer up their tips to kind of running a successful Kickstarter. And I know many people listen to the show are more than interested in doing that or picking up a few things. It's also got a great interview with Ryan K. Lindsay. He's an absolute just a font of knowledge regarding comics, and he's real one to watch. It's a great issue. You can pick it up for a few quid if you go to the paulist.com or Patreon Comics. They should have links there, and you can buy it from Gumroad. Highly recommend. Give it a good read.
Mm. Cracking stuff.
Cool.
My pick this week is one I picked up yesterday, and it's more of a zine than a comic, but I think it heralds exciting things to come. Now, this is the Swap, which is from the Wine and Zine Collective.
Ah, yeah, so this. It's good.
Which is a fanzine of gender role reversal in pop culture. Now, the Wine and Zine Collective is a group of five ladies. I'm just going to look in the back just to make sure. Yes, five ladies who have come together. They got to know each other in 2009 through doing animation, etc. And now they're moving into sort of like doing different kind of illustration and comic projects and sort of pushing the boundaries. And the work on this, the cover, you may have seen this cover on social media, because it's a cover that's got like Rick and Morty, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, Harry Potter, I think Princess Daisy from Mario, and the name escapes me on the... The Bride of Frankenstein is on the cover, but the gender roles have all been flipped.
So is it the husband of Frankenstein?
It is indeed, yes, because it starts off... And it's all the artists come together. It's like art pieces. So it's less a comic and more sort of... I tell you what, it's glorious artwork in here by all five. You know, and because of the nature of the project as well, I find I'm staring at the pieces more than I would necessarily a sketchbook. I love sketchbooks as well, by the way. Because of... it starts off with, like, Attack of the 50-Foot Man, which is done like an old-school sort of poster. You got the woman from the Black Lagoon, the husband of Frankenstein... yeah, and then there's other panels where they Little Shop of Horrors gets done, The Hunchback of Notre Dame. There's a cowgirl bebop, which is quite cool. And the artwork's beautiful on every page. You know, it's wonderful stuff. It's really nice, sort of nicely put together. Walking Dead. My favourite, and I think it's because I'm late to the game, but Rick and Morty has infected my system.
Oh yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah. And there's a Rick and Morty in the back, which is just pitch perfect. Now the five creators, you got Gemma Roberts, I'm probably going to murder this second name, as we do on this show, Jessica Leslau, or Leslew, I don't know, please correct me. You got Zara Williams, Claire Spiller, and Bryony Evans. Now, Claire and Bryony, I actually met at Cardiff yesterday, and they're... You can just tell there's enthusiasm just pouring out of them. So I'm looking forward to seeing some comic stuff, you know, based on this. Every single one of these artists are like, oh yes, I want a comic of that. You know, I love this style of artwork. So I'm looking forward to seeing what this collective does. I think they've sort of exploded onto the scene with a very sort of polished first product. Cool. So you can find them at Wine and Zine, which is how it's... I remember when on the Cardiff show last week, we were debating how it was said, but it's actually Wine and Zine. You can find them at Wine and Zine on Twitter, and they've got a shop at wineandzine.bigcartel.com, which has got Swap on there and another publication that they've put together. But there's going to be plenty more. I believe Claire is going to be launching a comic at Thought Bubble. So, yeah, check them out, because I think there's going to be lots more to come from them. Andy.
Yes, I have one, and it is Soldier Zero from Boom. Yeah. And it was from 2011. It was from that time when Stan Lee was apparently creating a bunch of books for Boom, but wasn't really, just kind of slapping his name on it and that sort of thing. Like he does. And it's, yeah, so Soldier Zero, it's written by Paul Cornell, art by Javier Pinar, and Sergio Arino. Let's say that. Colours by Alfred Rockefeller and Archie Van Buren, and letters by Ed Dukeshire. Yeah. So basically, Soldier Zero, I kind of talked about it a little bit when I was last on the show, but I incorrectly called it Starborn, which was a mix-up of one of the other books that came out from this line.
Yeah, that was the other thing, wasn't it? More like a sort of Captain Marvel stroke Iron Man story, wasn't it, Starborn?
Yeah. Whereas this is the story of a man named... hold on 2 seconds. I'm really prepared, as you can tell. is a man named Stuart Trotman, and he is a former Marine who, during his tour in Afghanistan, was hit by an IED, or a hidden explosive device, I believe, actually, and in the result was left paralyzed from the waist down. So he is confined to a wheelchair, which brings it back to the theme of the show.
Well done, you.
There we go. So yeah, basically, it starts off in space, which is always awesome. And there's this sort of epic space battle between a spaceship and this sort of mechanical Iron Man looking dude in a suit. And it sort of kind of cuts between that and the events of what is going on Earth. And basically, kind of when we get to Earth the first time, there's like this sign that says wheelchairs not allowed, fire regulations. And we kind of come across this shop, this kind of small corner shop that's called Chavez Market. And basically, we find our guy Stuart, who's trying to get into this shop, and he's basically told, no, you can't go in because of fire regulations. And he's sort of having a bit of a disagreement with the guy, kind of saying, come on, just sort of fill out the paperwork and you'll be fine, which results in another person in a wheelchair coming along, who's just sort of kind of going, that's not how you deal with this crap, this is how you deal with this crap. And she sort of just throws herself out of her chair onto the floor and starts trying to crawl into the shop in a really dramatic fashion. And this shop owner is just like losing his shit, going, you can't do that, what are you doing? And she's just like, well, how else am I going to get into your shop? There's steps up, you won't build a ramp, blah, blah, blah. And the main guy, Stuart, is sort of saying, you know, that's not how you do things. You don't cause massive scenes. You do it through dialogue. I happen to believe both are true from personal experience. But that was kind of really cool. And then he sort of leaves the area and sort of like, I'm not dealing with that, that's just ridiculous, and kind of meets up with his brother, who sort of, they have a little chat. And it's kind of about Stuart sort of readjusting to being back home. I think he's been back for quite a little while, but he's sort of readjusting to being in a wheelchair. There's like a scene where some kids sort of snigger, like having a little bit of a laugh as he walks by, right. And his brother automatically assumes they're laughing at him. You know, so his brother James, so he starts having a go at them, and you know, Stuart's sort of saying, look, they're not, just leave it alone. But obviously, you know, the brother hyper protective, and you know, that's quite a realistic thing, you know, for people who have loved ones in a wheelchair, being really hyper protective and sort of seeing, you know, dangers or whatever where maybe there isn't any. Which is kind of cool. And then basically he goes on to have talk about he's going to have a date tonight, or possibly meet up with a girl that he's interested in. And we kind of cut to that scene where the girl's talking to her friend and they're discussing about how they approach certain conversations. Like, oh, are you going to ask him about this? Are you going to ask him about that? You know, and again, I can imagine this being quite a realistic conversation about someone who's interested in someone in a wheelchair that maybe has no experience about people in wheelchairs. So how do you approach that kind of subject? And I kind of thought that was quite a nice little moment where they're trying to have this cool conversation about approaching a man, and but he's in a wheelchair, and do we talk about whether it works down there? You know, that sort of thing.
Right, okay.
You see what I mean? And then it kind of skips forward to this whole idea of because he's a professor, the main guy's a professor, he teaches astronomy at a university now, and there's this meteor shower, and apparently there's like a big party on top of a building, and he goes up in a lift, and he's on a roof, but everyone's on another roof, and that building doesn't have a lift, so he's sort of left on his own. But then luckily the girl Lily, her name is, she kind of comes along and they start having this conversation, a very private conversation, and all of a sudden, boom, this alien creature comes smashing into them in this, who was having this space battle, and they're all trapped under rubble and he's a dying alien, and we have that epic Green Lantern moment where he's like, I'm dying, take my superpowers. And this sort of biomechanical suit forms around him, and he's now suddenly this biomechanical superhero who lifts up all the rubble, and you know, it kind of goes crazy from there because there's more aliens and whatnot, and you kind of get into the story behind the biomechanical suit. It's alive, it's sort of a symbiote, so it's kind of like a mechanical Venom. Right. Which is kind of cool. I don't want to ruin it too much. I won't say much more about the story because I feel like I've maybe, you know, talked a lot. I just thought it kind of was an interesting take with the way they handled the disabilities and the way they kind of handled the conversations that people have and the way that people have kind of perceived and with wheelchairs and how. And yeah, I really liked it. I read the first volume on Comixology. And which I think is actually going for cheaper at the moment, so it could be worth checking out. I really liked it. I thought it was quite a positive way of it. I mean, you know, they highlight the disability a lot, but I think that there's a purpose to it. It's not just kind of going, this guy's in a wheelchair, everyone. It serves the story, which I think is very important. So yeah, cool. Soldier Zero, boom.
So that's Boom the publisher. Because the way you said it was like Soldier Zero, boom, drop the mic.
I kind of wanted to leave it there. So people didn't know.
You can see, look, you still had your drop the mic moment, Andy.
Yeah,
all right.
You ruined it.
He's always a diva. Every time we have him on, what a diva.
He is. He's a proper diva. But we love him anyway. We love him despite that. And we hope that you guys enjoyed the chat we've had this week. I know we have. Always a pleasure, Andy. Always a pleasure. Until you're offline, and then we'll complain about you. But as I said earlier, you know, if you want to get in touch with us, there's several different ways you can do it. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. If you've got any more characters, there's a couple of spaces left on our jam piece.
Getting tight.
Didn't we have another one or two during the week?
We've got a couple more. So I will probably upload an update, and then we'll know exactly how many we've got left.
Cool.
Over the coming week. But you can send your character to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we'll be talking about next week's show. I'm probably putting up some polls. It's going to be another fascinating one next week. We're on form at the moment, aren't we, lads? We're properly on form.
I see our listening figures have gone up recently as well, which I'm quite pleased about.
They have, yeah. and we're getting new listeners all the time.
Yeah, which is nice. That's good.
Because we met a new listener this very weekend.
We did. Yeah. We speak about him on the special, don't we?
Yeah, there you go. You have to listen to that now. Yeah. like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, and join the group that everyone's talking about. I'm running out of ways to talk about it. Awesome Comics Talk is our specific group that we've created for people to talk about comics and making comics.
Yeah.
And it's not
putting pictures of you on there.
Oh god. And, you know, advice, and, you know, there's advice, there's book clubs, there's just talking about general comic topics. It's not, we haven't created it to be a sales place, shall we say.
No,
yeah, so
exactly.
We're keeping an eye on that. So, I mean, that's not to say you can't post about your Kickstarter, but, you know, we like it to be.
If you want advice
like,
about your Kickstarter, we're all about that.
And we've had a few
spammers with
advice. We've had a few posts about such things, actually, Kickstarters recently.
Yeah.
In fact, I believe Sarah Millman posted with advice. So,
yeah.
And her Kickstarter is now live and doing well. So there you go. Awesome Comics Talk. It's where all the cool kids go. And occasionally us three go on there as well. And thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, the Podnose Network, wherever you found us, if there's a chance to leave a review, please do. because we love you. We really do.
Do we?
We do.
Oh yeah.
Dan does, don't you, Dan? You
love him.
Yeah. So much love to give that man. yes. Thank you very much. Now, where can people find us online, etc.? Dan.
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com. I've just finished issue 13, so
yeah, killing it, mate. Already on the training massive, today.
Very good. Massive weight is lifted.
Yeah, nicely done as well. Because I asked you first, I thought I'm really going to throw him by asking Dan first, but you were on point. Well done, Tony. Where can people find you?
Twitter is ezohyz. I put a couple of things up at neverironanything.blogspot.com, and there's a couple of things when John gets back, I think next week from his holiday, there's a couple of things going up and down the tubes.
Nice. There you go. Splendid. Now, if you want to see a picture of my cats, then you can follow me at Jester Diablo.
With your cat army.
My cat army. The feline fury is growing with each post. You can find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. And Andy... Elizabeth. Hello. Clift. No, Elizabeth isn't his middle name. But where can people find you online, etc.?
Well, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram, both on at Andy W. Clift. And you can find all sorts of news on my comics and my art on my website, which is awclift.co.uk.
Awesome. Well, what have you got coming out, dude? Just what have we got you on?
Oh, well, I'm working on a few things at the moment. I'm working on a sort of a Silver Age superhero, sort of space superhero.
Oh, I've seen the sketch of that. It looks fucking ace. Yeah.
I'm not quite ready for it yet, like to kind of announce it yet. But
knowing your style, I already know that's going to be mint.
That's right up my street as well. I've seen some of the sketches, mate. Like, I love that sort of Michael Red Darwin Cook feel it's got. Yeah, it looks great. Yeah.
Oh, guys, they'll stop it.
What cons you at? You got many coming up, or?
Yeah, London Super Comic Con. Yeah,
that is going to be a beast.
Yeah.
Sleep 3 days. Me and Vince already talked about where we can find somewhere to go off and quietly drink.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's going to be amazing. Bender's is going to be there. That's awesome.
Oh, we've got to interview him.
And the newly announced Valiant Comics are going to be there.
Yes.
Anyone who's listened to this show knows that we've talked about Valiant quite a bit. Yeah. So if they'll let us, we'll try and talk to them for you as well.
The people on the Valiant stand are going to find out how much we've talked about them.
Yeah.
I'm going to wear a Valiant t-shirt and go over and talk to them.
Oh, don't. Are you just going to wear that? You're going to be like Winnie the Pooh?
I'm going to just tuck it between my legs, going to plimp, all plimping in it when you stick it out the back.
Can it be homemade, though? Yeah. Like, you know, just like magic markers or something.
My art's not really that good, but I'll have a go, Andy.
And as he approaches, I can come in with a microphone and just sort of say, I'll keep him away from you if you'll give me an interview.
Yeah, we may have to kidnap a couple of them, mightn't we, just to sort of...
I've got to edit that out now, haven't I?
We're not the Sinister Six. I think we're quite...
Terrible three? No, that doesn't work. Yeah. No,
the Turdy Trio, probably.
Yeah.
I can do better. Turdy Trio.
Yes, so London Super Comic Con, that's going to be good. What else, what else, Andy? After that, are you doing?
Thought Bubble. And then I think that's it for the year, actually, because like I say, I don't do a lot because of the travelling and all that jazz.
Yeah.
So the only ones that are confirmed at the moment for me, October MCM.
Cool.
Okay. Cool. Okay. I won't see you there. I might see you outside.
Yeah.
So like the majority of the people that go.
Yeah. Andy has to look after me and tell me to calm down at MCM, so I can't go.
I do. It's one of the things I look forward to.
And we look forward to you being on the show, Andy, so welcome back anytime. Thank you for listening, folks. Hope you enjoyed it. It's been another good one in the books, and even more to come. So, as always, for the next week, read lots of comics. Later on this week, download the... Cardiff Expo special, because it's quite funny, with some special guests you won't expect.
I am now the master of impressions, you know that, don't you? Although I think Elizabeth Taylor was quite a good one, although I don't do that one.
Spoilers.
I've not listened to this yet, so this is going to be great.
So hold on, you don't do that one, so can you do it now?
No, I can't. No, someone does it much better than me. Yeah, I can't. I won't spoil it. I'll tell you off air.
Yeah. It's very good. Yeah, so do that. Download that episode. Read lots of comics. Check out something new. And as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
Bye.